Picture this. A recording studio somewhere far, far away.
The Merry White House Experience! Thank you, good evening, and welcome to the Merry White House Experience. I would advise all listeners to carry on listening till the end of tonight's show, as one of you has been chosen by our computer to receive a special prize. 2 weeks in Nagorno-Karabakh. Punt and Dennis aren't here tonight, so they're missing out on all the delights of doing a comedy show. They're actually in Ipswich supporting Jasper Carrot. Oh dear. Right.
I'll start now?
Yeah, start now. I'm sorry about it.
Yeah, keep walking till Kilburn. And now, part one of the school experience. This week sees the beginning of a new school term. Now, everyone has at some point or another been to school. Everyone except, it seems, the man who writes Grange Hill. Now, everyone also thinks that their school is unique, whereas, in fact, wherever you go, it's exactly the same. So, to counter the Tory revised curriculum, we have drawn up our own people's curriculum, and here is the timetable for it.
9:30, lesson with Mr. Crap. Now, whatever he's called, there'll be one of these at your school. Someone who has decided to go into teaching, despite the fact that they have no natural authority whatsoever. In fact, he will normally be called something like Mr. Crap, because he's the kind of person who'll still think, oh yes, I'll go into teaching. There's a profession in which my name will escape ridicule. A classic mistake that all teachers make is that they think they know what their nickname is, and will talk about it in the pub when they bump into your dad.
Oh yeah, I know what they all call me. You don't have to tell me. Yeah, my name's Avery, so they call me Birdie. Could be worse, I suppose.
Oh, so it must be another Avery who my son calls Mr. Embryo Head, then. That's actually how I recognised you in the first place.
11:15, break. Now, we can't go much further into this sketch, ladies and gentlemen, without introducing a key concept. Something which, to avoid using the word spasmo, we shall call the school spanner. The school spanner will have a number of distinguishing features. Firstly, he will be very bad at sport. In fact, he will be more than this. He will take being bad at sport into a new dimension.
Yeah. Stuart Hindle, on sports day, like with all your parents there and everything, was so crap at the 400 metres, he was allowed to use his bike. And it was a stowaway shopping bike. And he still came last.
Secondly, he will carry about with him a very strange smell. Not exactly BO, but something sort of beyond BO. There are certain features which are optional extras for the school spanner about town. A good one, for example, will have only one testicle. His mother may be found wandering naked around Safeways, premature baldness for his mother wandering naked around Safeways. But the most important thing about the school spanner is that at some point in his school career, he must wet his trousers on a grand public occasion. The school spanner is at heart a situationist. He has a great sense of the moment of spectacle. It is as well then that none of them have risen to positions of prominence.
And as Helmut Kohl steps forward to lay a wreath on the tomb of the unknown soldier, Herr Genscher, the foreign minister, has pooed his pants.
Finally, at the end of the morning school, Mr. Avery takes biology.
Right, now we have here a picture of the human fetus. Ah, no, that's my passport photo.
While you listen to the Mary Whitehouse Experience, we'd like to remind you what you could be doing instead. People get up to a whole range of things on Friday and Saturday nights, and we thought it was time we took a look at some of them.
Firstly, we present the eating out experience. Now, eating out is, of course, not to be confused with taking out. Takeaways are to be avoided at all costs. This is because, on Friday and Saturday nights, entry to takeaway food establishments is strictly controlled. They will only let in completely drunk people. As a rule, if you can read the menu, you're not drunk enough for a takeaway, which is lucky for you. The best example of takeaway food is the doner kebab, the consumption of which is akin to eating an old wallet stuffed with used odour eaters. Far better far better to have a sit-down meal. But where?
Let's consider Italian restaurants. Now, you'll always know when you're in an Italian restaurant because on the wall will be a picture of the 1982 Italian World Cup squad. And underneath the words Campione del Mondo, which is Italian for came nowhere 4 years later.
A very popular type of restaurant is the pizza restaurant. Pizza is basically posh cheese on toast. And it is, and for this reason, lots of places like to give their pizzas embarrassing names just to make you feel stupid when you order them. Instead of saying,
I'll have the pizza with tomato, pepperoni and onion.
They force you to say,
I'll have the great huge wobbly knob special, please.
Another phenomenon you will be confronted with in a pizza restaurant is the salad bar.
Waitress?
Yes, sir?
Can I have a side salad, please?
Yes, certainly. Would you like dressing with that?
Yes, please.
Thousand Island, French or blue cheese? That's the bilious, vomity orange one, the oily, vinegary one, or the one that looks like semen.
Oh, I'll have the one that looks like semen, please.
If this doesn't take your fancy, you can always try pub food. Food in pubs is quite unique. When you go into the pub, you'll see a sinister-looking glass case that looks like an empty fish tank. In it will be A, a huge Stilton, B, a pie, of which one slice was removed sometime in 1983, and C, a can of Vapona Fly Killer. Our advice to you tonight is order the Vapona Fly Killer. Pub food is easy. It's all mince. Stick potato on top, shepherd's pie. Add tomatoes, spaghetti bolognese. Add kidney beans, chili con carne. Flatten it a bit, beef burgers. Add 8 pints of lager, vomit.
If none of this appeals, you could always try fast food. You'll always know when you're entered a fast food restaurant because the first thing you see will be a man in a paper Thunderbird's hat carrying a mop. The only seats not occupied by hyperactive 7-year-olds will be the ones marked this section closed off. Also, there will be a sign reading more seating upstairs, even if it's a single-storey building.
Another sure sign of being in a fast food restaurant is the fact that the service will be extremely slow. Especially if you order fish. It's on the menu, there's a picture of it, but there isn't any in the building. A couple of phone calls later, it's ascertained that there is an elderly but edible filet at the branch in West Norwood, which they can easily red star to you by 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. Faced with this, you plump for the beef burger, very wise, since the average filet is usually a piece of leathery old coley dipped in 2 coats of Dulux vinyl emulsion.
At some time in their life, most people work in a fast food restaurant. This is a deeply shattering experience, and some of them never recover.
Susan, there's something that, well, I've meant to say for you for a long time. Susan, will you marry me? Oh, say you will, and I'll be the happiest man in the world. What do you say?
Do you want prize with that?
There is one final type of restaurant we haven't mentioned. Indian. Indian food is a subtle, harmonious blend of delicate spices. Cardamom, saffron, turmeric, a melange of flavours skillfully combined. Or, in other words, curry. Don't be confused by all the different names they have for it. Korma, Dansak, Dupriyaza, Jalfrezi, Madras, Sharky, Biryani. It's all curry. If you're a bloke and you go for a curry with your mates, please remember the rules of curry. First, always drink too much lager before you go. Second, always order far too many poppadoms so that you can't even finish the main course. Third, whatever dish you order, it must be chicken. No one ever has lamb, and after 8 pints of lager, most people couldn't tell the difference between vegetable curry and a bowl of Heinz Big Soup with too much pepper in it. My name's Keith Floyd. Good night.
And my name's Mark Hurst. Good evening. Mark means warrior, which is, I know that because I have a book here, Names for Boys and Girls. One of these books which tells you all the meanings for names if you're having a baby, so you don't choose a naff one for yours. There's a lot of them about. This one's the Modern Book of Penguins Names. Penguin Book of Modern Names, I'm sorry. And it does tell you what your names mean. Mark means warrior. Graham means gallant one who lives by a river. Elmore, I don't know how they work this one out, Elmore means dweller by an elm tree on the moor. John means knobhead. A lot of them about, you know. What's your name there, sir? Andy. Say it down the microphone.
Andy.
Andy. Right at the beginning of the book. Andy, I've got it. It says, see John. The other Penguin paperback that I'm waiting is the Satanic Verses. Will they publish it? I hope they do. It is a year now since Salman Rushdie went into hiding, and he's had 50 or 60 different addresses, apparently. It's just as well. If the same people had been putting him up, they'd be getting a bit frazzled by this time. I thought he said it was just a week he was staying at, you know? He doesn't do anything. He just phones the Guardian all the time. He won't even go out for any milk. What's the matter with him, you know? It's hard, you know. You've got to tell him that, Salman. Everything's fine, lovely jubbly, cushy rushy. But listen, mate. listen, I can't say it. Look, just pull the string when you go to the toilet. You couldn't throw him out. We're too easy with people. When we put people up in our house, we say things like, "Make yourself at home. Just make yourself at home. Here's a key. Make yourself at home." You wouldn't like it if you came home, they changed all the furniture around, would you? Oh, I've knocked two rooms into one upstairs. You don't mind, do you? You should be honest with these people. Say, make yourself a hot drink and don't look in any cupboards while I'm out, all right? Censorship. They should bring out the paperback. Censorship. I watched the Postman Always Rings Twice. That was on last night. And they got rid of all the sex scenes, and it was really badly added. It was edited by Freddy Krueger, I think that was last night. And it's like, they're going to have to cut out the sex scene from Women in Love, because Glenda Jackson, this is the Acid House version of this joke you're getting out of. Glenda Jackson is down for selection as Labour MP for Hampstead. Now, if they run that old movie, Women in Love, that she's thrashing around in bed with Oliver Reed shouting, "Must I die?" Now, you don't expect that from a Labour MP. Well, Ron Brown, you might do, man. Yeah, that's basically, you know. I can't trust MPs, and the public aren't aware enough. Who is going to save our planet? Because it's getting serious now. Metaphorically speaking, it's like Atlas arms are finally getting a bit tired now. One day he's looking, "Oh, bollocks to you, forget it, you know." Who is going to save our planet? Only supernatural intervention can save our planet. And this could come from two areas in my mind. Could be a superhero comes down, like we have Superman and Batman. Eco-Man might come down now. Holy Ozone Layer, Eco-Man, only you can save us. And like Batman has enemies like the Riddler and Penguin and Catwoman, only Eco-Man's enemies are Ridley, Patton and that woman. It's the same. Like that. Perhaps Jesus Christ might come back down to save the planet, the second coming. If he comes again, he won't be by himself, and he'll have a poster campaign as well. Be Jesus Christ, the last crusade. This time he's bringing his dad. Could be there. Seriously, well, the worst criticism of the left is that when they bring out that phrase "loony left," that really gets my goat, because there are people who believe that there is a loony left, you know? They think there's a contingent that go on marches at the back going, "What do we want? When do we want it? Boy, oi, 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 oi." They do. One of the greatest critics of the left, Norman Tebbit, now a backbencher, he's released his latest single. It's a 12-inch Jive Bunny remix of Enoch Powell's old arguments, I think it is, you know. Rivers of blood. He's there, you know. George Bush, a great critic of the left, but I must give him his due. He was the first person that I heard in public talking about the reunification of Germany. When he first came out as president, he didn't come out, he got the job. I mean, that would have been a good day for America, wouldn't it, you know? "Thank you for voting me president-elect. I'd like to say I'm gay and I'm proud." Come on, Dan, let's go. When he first got the job as president, he said, "Tear down the Iron Curtain and knock down the Berlin Wall. Fix that rickety-dickety door handle in South Africa and put some shelves up in Nicaragua. I'll be back." Mr. International Interior Design or something, huh? "Have you seen Berlin since we knocked the two states into one? Oh, it's so much roomier. Come and have a look, yeah." "We tore down the Iron Curtain and put some blinds up. There's the West. How are you doing, huh?" Enjoy the rest of the show. Good night. Cheers.
This.
It's the Mary Whitehouse Experience.
Now, we'd just like to take a moment to say a word or two about the continuing saga of Salman Rushdie. This is an affair that has somewhat vanished from the public agenda in recent months, but we, as scriptwriters, would like to say that we can never let ourselves forget that freedom of speech and the opportunity to express one's personal opinions should never be subject to violence and intimidation.
Having said that, there was a review of the Mary Whitehouse Experience in Saturday's Times, written by a critic called Martin Cropper, which reads like this.
Quite honestly, the stuff that gets broadcast is, to borrow Bill Bryson's judicious simile, as thick as pig dribble. A farrago of brain-dead prattle, the opening programme artlessly insulted the likes of Linda McCartney and Leon Britton. There were contraceptive jokes and cocaine jokes and queasy injections of social comment a la Ben Elton.
Quite simply, we would like this man to be shot dead. Interestingly enough, the last person to criticise us was Frank Warren. And for those people who don't feel that strongly about the Mary Whitehouse Experience, perhaps we should read out the next paragraph of Martin Cropper, that's Martin Cropper's review.
And I'd also like to say that Iran is a shithole. Mohammed is bent. And President Rafsanjani's mother, to borrow Bill Bryson's judicious phrase, does it for money.
Now it's time for the punchline experience. Now, before the show started, the studio audience were asked to come up with a witty reply to the following joke. What will Judge Pickles say to Lord Lane next time they meet? Now, they've all been gathered up on bits of yellow paper, and I shall read them all out, and the funniest will win a prize. Right, what will Judge Pickles say to Lord Lane next time they meet? Why didn't you tell me it was you who knocked her up? And that's from H. Amberger. There's a lot of punchlines in this sort of vein, I should tell you now. Well observed the vernacular as used by judges there. What will Judge Pickles say to Lord Lane next time they meet? If it had been Cecil's, I'd have had her well and truly banged to rights. And that's from Sarah Keys. All right. There's a hollow at the base of your throat that I'd like to pour honey over and lick off. I rather like that. That's from Fatima Blush. That goes in the pocket. Guilty! I like that. I thought you were better when you were with Paul McCartney, and when did they make you a lord? And that's from someone called Parsley. We have a select audience here. He won't say anything. There will just be a pregnant pause. And that's from R.M. Nixon. No, I don't think all pregnant criminals should go to jail, only Fergie. For God's sake, Lane, the next time you get some young tart up the duff, don't ask me to find her accommodation. That's from Andrew Robinson, probably an estate agent. Yes, I think that one wins. Okay, thank you very much. Hello, my English friends. Welcome once again to Rapido. Naturally, of course, actually, my accent is so strong that many people think to themselves, Jesus, all of a sudden I can understand French perfectly. Sadly not, my friends, sadly not the case, but sadly now we have for you, not Transvision Web, oh what a shame, never mind, Peur Dimanche, we have for you, please go crazy for, the Tracy Brothers, yeah!
This is a song for people of a certain age out there, like our age, and it's a song about sex, it's about nostalgia, it's about 2.5 minutes. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Boy meets girl inside the brasserie, 25 quid for a plate of sushi. The music's loud, they don't have ketchup, and the waitress looks like John Belushi. They think it's shit, but they say they love it. They talk about having an affair. He talks about Beckett, but he's getting a stiffy, and he wishes he was hung like a bear. 10 minutes, talking to his analyst, pouring out his cares. He remembers when sex was just an excuse for putting on his brand new flares. We're talking about sex in the 70s, love was so much easier. You snogged all night, drank too much cider, and you woke up with amnesia. And a love bite. Oh, Gino. Boy meets girl, Friday night party. There's couples in the closet and there's coats on the bed. They bop a bit to Gary Glitter, then one martini goes straight to his head. She says she's wearing strawberry lip gloss. They talk about one another's age. Then someone puts on a tongue thrash classic, and 20 minutes later they're engaged. 20 minutes, vomiting in the garden. She's getting off to Barry White. He'll wake up covered in vomit and lip gloss and do it all again tomorrow night. We're talking about sex in the 70s, love was never a trauma. You snogged all night, felt a bit funny, and you threw up your chicken korma at the bus stop. When a fortnight meant a long-term relationship, the days of the clash and the Cold War, and the only reason for breaking a date was an exam in the morning or a cold sore. We're talking about sex in the 70s. Couples were never bitchy. When oral sex meant, hey, you talked about it, and you dance to Lionel Richie, three times a lady. Sex in the 70s. Sex in the 70s. Sex in the 70s.
This. It's the Mary White House Experience. Tonight, in the Soviet Union, on the shoulders of one man rest both the hopes of the world and Raisa's legs. Now, in an effort to prevent civil war at this late stage, the first question we'd like to ask is, what makes Armenia or Azerbaijan think that they would make a credible separate nation state?
Okay, great. Gorby's given us the go-ahead. Okay, so what natural resources can we use to stake our place in the world economy?
Well, there's my goat.
Yes, yes, there's Dmitry's goat. What else? Something that would gain Armenia some respect with the International Monetary Fund, perhaps?
Well, there's my goat.
Hey! Hey, Japan, watch out.
Yes.
Oh, no, I forgot. I ate it yesterday.
No, everybody, you don't understand. We need a modern industrial base, a new economic infrastructure, and a complete updating of all technological resources.
Oh, well, you want Olaf's goat, then. Ho-ho.
Nationalism is always crap, but it's particularly crap when the nation involved is crap. I mean, let's be honest. What chance do Azerbaijan have of winning the next World Cup? All right, they'd probably beat England. But that's about it. And the disputed region, Nagorno-Karabakh, that was only founded because God once needed a really high score at Scrabble. It is the essential crapness of the area that has been forgotten by political commentators, particularly in their interpretation of recent scenes of Gorbachev on the streets.
Please don't leave. What are we going to do without Azerbaijan? The whole country might come crashing down. I don't think I can keep my job without your help. Thank you.
Now, this may sound straightforward enough. The area is crucially important. But our research has shown that the simultaneous translator was missing out one important factor. Gorbachev's tone.
Oh, no. Oh, please don't leave. I mean, what are we going to do without Azerbaijan? I mean, the whole country might come down. I don't think. I can keep my job without your help. Thank you.
But Gorbachev, amazingly, has gone out onto the streets and offered his future up to the Azeris. Imagine what might happen if politicians here were to adopt the same tactics, if Malcolm Rifkin were to tell the Scottish people, look, if you carry on like this, I may lose my job. What's more, their two demands are freedom and unification with Iran. Their two demands might as well be double glazing and a relationship with Ron Brown. But in all the questions fired at him, there is one question that Gorbachev, however, never answers. Why does he always dress like Peter O'Sullivan? Well, a clue may lie in this tape made from a bugging device on the Kremlin balcony during last year's May Day parade.
And does it get leveled at the 15th Bellon mark with the Statue of Lenin? It's the Polaris missiles from the SS-20s, and behind them the 4th Battalion of the People's Red Army and Sugar. And the slightly out-of-date tanks finding the going very difficult as they come up to the 10th Bellon mark and the Statue of Lenin. But coming on strong with a late chase is the float of anabolic women gymnasts waving long red strips of material on hoops. Why on earth do they do that? I'm the president of this country, and even I don't know why they do that. Now, with 5 furlongs to go as they get level with the Statue of Lenin, it's neck and neck, and it looks like it's going to be the SS-20s, but I have to tell you what the papers really mean by Gorby's biggest gamble. I got 20 rubles on the anabolic gymnasts, and that's our entire GNP. So, Raisa, pass me those special binoculars. I want a closer look at the SS-20s. That'll be 5,000 rubles, please, Mr. Makari.
Picture this.
And now, to finish the show, we throw the phone lines open. The number to ring is 01-428-7756, and you can phone in on any subject raised by the week's news or the show so far.
Hello, Mary Whitehouse Experience.
Hello.
Hello, this is Martin Cropper speaking. I'd just like to say that I thought the sketch about me was absolutely brilliant. I feel such an idiot having criticised you in the past. Keep up the good work. P.S. Would you mind terribly much calling off the Mujahideen?
Thank you very much. If anyone else has any views on the subject of critics and the role they fulfil, perhaps they could speak into the microphone now.
Hello, it so happens I know a rather good story about just that. I remember a critic once said to me, so funny. He once said to me, Ronnie, he said, Ronnie, you are shit. And of course, he was absolutely right. I mean, let me show you. There was this Irish reviewer staying at a hotel. And incidentally, have you noticed that one of my nostrils is far bigger than the other one? Please help me.
Right, sorry, Ronnie. Can we have our next caller, please?
Hello, boys. Mikhail Gorbachev here.
Yes, hello, Mr. Gorbachev. Things are sounding quite bad out there.
Yes, I knew I shouldn't have moved into Ron Brown's mistress's flat.
Now, if anyone else has any calls on crimes and misdemeanors...
Hello, this is Woody Allen. I'm phoning to complain about people who say that all my films are completely autobiographical. You know, to the extent that I merely record on film what happens to me every day.
Oh, I see.
Cut. Right, that's a wrap, everybody.
Hello, Bob. I thought you'd better know I've moved again. I'm now at 13 Bedford Gardens, West 8. Usual discretion appreciated. Thanks.
I'm afraid you've got the wrong number, Mr. Rushdie.
Hello? Hello, emergency services. Quick, I need an ambulance.
Bad luck, Mr. Clark. And, on line 2.
Hello, it's me again with a quick joke. Which well-loved duo is this? There's a large one and a small one.
The two Ronnies?
No, my nostrils. But I digress. Or at least my nose does.
Yes. Fabulous. And now a Mr. Morris, who's apparently on the A303 near Windsor. Hello.
Hello. I was talking to Hilda the Hippopotamus the other day. And I said, hello, hippo. how are you? And she said, ooh. Because I just run her over, see?
You've been listening to The Mary Whitehouse Experience. It was written and performed by David Baddiel, Rob Newman, Nick Hancock, Mark Hurst, Donald McPhail and the Tracy Brothers. It was also written by Steve Punt and Q Dennis. The sound was by Alec Hale-Munro and the producer was Bill Dare.